Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph from Monday, June 22nd, 2026. From the front page of the paper, Bloomington, freedom rings at Juneteenth. Hundreds celebrate liberation at 33rd annual event by D. Jack Alkery. Bloomington, hundreds gathered in Miller Park on Saturday to celebrate liberation and freedom at the 33rd annual Bloomington Normal Juneteenth celebration. Besides food trucks, vendors, and a health fair, revelers were treated to live music from soul and hip-hop to gospel, and performances from the Galaxy Diamonds Youth Dance, the Jump for Joy Squad, Inc., and Emma Ofiarwa Oduanum, professor of ethnomusicology at Illinois State University. They also honored the inaugural court of Bloomington's Miss Juneteenth, Mackenzie McRae, age 17, and Little Miss Juneteenth, Journey Lawson, 12. It actually means a lot to us, said Kayana Miller, Journey's mother. Growing up, I don't even remember us being here for Juneteenth, so just to see this big event is amazing. Juneteenth, which became a federal holiday in 2021, marks the day the final enslaved Black Americans heard about the Emancipation Proclamation on June 19, 1865, a full 2 years after President Abraham Lincoln announced the freedom of all people held as slaves in any state. Juneteenth is the acknowledgement that liberation is already here, said the Reverend Alexis Wilson Thomas. The fact that you can see this plethora of Black people, that Juneteenth is the moment of resistance, that is also the presence of Jesus. Beside the merriment, there three were recognized for their advocacy for the Black and African American communities in McLean County. Emily Bell, Evelyn Young, and Monica Taylor were named Juneteenth 2026 community icons. Taylor was named posthumously, and her family received the honor in her stead. Freedom without judgment. The Juneteenth celebration started in Bloomington in 1993 on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University. Since moving to Miller Park 5 years ago, it feels like the crowd has grown with each iteration, said Mimi Lamb, owner of Mimi's Boutique. It should be celebrated, so it means a lot. It's freedom for the African American community. It's freedom, and I like it because a lot of people are celebrating it with us. No judgment, Lamb said. Bloomington Police Chief Jamal Symington was on hand to represent the continued relationship building between the community and the police, but he was also there to celebrate. A lot of smiles, a lot of good times, laughter, creating memories and connections, that's important, he said. God gave us a very good day to do this. But Juneteenth is also about looking to ensure the younger generations can prosper as well, said Jeffrey Statton with 100 Black Men of Central Illinois, a community organization that has been mentoring youth since 2003. What Juneteenth does is remind us of, really, the privileges and the liberties that we have as a community, as Americans, so that we can take advantage of everything that's before us, so that we can move forward and make sure that our next generations are able to thrive and do well. Freedom for optimism. Freedom starts with a personal feeling, said Fantasia Terrell, head coach and founder of Jump for Joy Squad, Inc. To me, personally, as long as you know that you're free, you're free. Like some of the slaves, they were free in their mind, she said, finger on her temple. Andrew Thomas, chair of the Bloomington Normal Black History Project, said the meaning of freedom has changed in the last 160 years. Freedom in 1865 means something completely different than what freedom means today, he said. Freedom in 1865 literally meant that you have the right to leave a plantation and catch up with your family members, and you don't have to wear chains in bondage anymore. Well, now freedom means being able to have the same rights and representations as white people. Many people wore t-shirts with slogans marking the event, expressing freedom and liberty. We're free to buy what we want, but as late as the 1980s, we understand we weren't free to live anywhere we want, Andrew Thomas said. Some t-shirts reflected that, too, with the words free-ish, established 1865. Bell, the community icon, had recently been interviewed for the Bloomington Normal Black History Project, Andrew Thomas said, and much of her work in the 1980s focused on ending racially charged housing discrimination in McLean County. I don't think that was so long ago, Andrew Thomas said. I was born in 78, so I was around there. So, the 1980s and 2026, there's a big gap in time, but we understand how politics can make humanity and all the contributions that humanity has done to better itself regress. But Juneteenth brings with it a sense of faithful optimism, said the Reverend Alexis Wilson Thomas, who preaches a theology of liberation. Jesus' existence was a resistance to the empire. Black bodies in America, the presence of black bodies in America, is a resistance, she said. So, this is an act of resistance to the empire. That's the theology. That is the divine working through all of us, to be able to say God is present in all things, and also in the freedom of black people. Despite some feeling only partly free, Andrew Thomas said he believes, after this particular time in our history, the optimism would definitely be in seeing freedom, free-ish will, turn to equality. There were several photos that were with this article as well, including showing an exhibit with the Bloomington Normal Black History Project and the McLean County Museum of History, honoring the contributions of those in McLean County, which was displayed Saturday at the Juneteenth celebration at Miller Park. A picture of Emily Bell, who was recognized as one of the three Juneteenth 2026 community icons, dancers with Galaxy Diamonds Youth Dance getting ready for their performance at the Juneteenth celebration. Shanice Bell holding a sleepy 9-month-old Donovan Saturday at the celebration in Miller Park. A picture of the inaugural winners of the Little Miss Juneteenth, 12-year-old Journey Lawson, and Miss Juneteenth, Mackenzie McRae. And a photo of DJ Jones, 11, performing with the Jump for Joy Squad at the celebration at Miller Park. Turning to page 2 of the Monday, July 22nd edition of the Pantograph, today's Flick Fact. Question: what covers more ground, San Francisco, Manhattan, or Bloomington Normal? Believe it or not, San Francisco measures 46.7 square miles, while Bloomington Normal comes in very close at 46.1. Manhattan, just 22.8 square miles, or easily half the size of BN, although not population-wise. The Bloomington Normal metro area has about 172,000 people. Manhattan, about 1.4 million. How time flies. 100 years ago, June 22, 1926, quackgrass flourishes on the old circus lot on East Oakland Avenue. It was evidently imported with hay brought to the lot in circus wagons or in the cleanings from the cages. A year or so ago, some mention was made concerning the new grass appearing on the lot. Now the darker grass has spread to a larger area. 75 years ago, June 22, 1951, has the McLean County Courthouse outlived its usefulness for county governmental affairs? Its classic Italian shell be dirtied as it has been by soot and birds over the years, is straining to contain the activities within. 50 years ago, June 22, 1976, a one-woman campaign for a moratorium on residential development was launched at the Normal City Council meeting. The driving force is Councilwoman Jocelyn Bell. "I will not approve any more subdivisions until I see we can deal with our water, sewer, and street problems," she said. 25 years ago, June 22, 2001, Stacy Barger is used to putting up a fight. As Hayworth High School's girls' basketball coach for the last 4 years, she has transformed the fledgling team into a successful unit, with last season ending with 21 wins and 7 losses. Off the court, she's facing a bigger challenge. "Right now, I'm supposed to be pregnant. Steve, her husband, and I were going to start a family, but that will have to wait now," said Barger, who on April 4th was diagnosed with breast cancer. Her friends have established a fund at the First State Bank of Hayworth to help the Bargers with their medical bills, and a benefit auction is scheduled for June 24th at the Hayworth American Legion. Returning to the front page, Mideast, Trump threatens Iran with new strikes. Vice President attends talks in Switzerland. By Dave Graham, Reuters. Burgenstock, Switzerland. President Donald Trump threatened Sunday to restart the war with Iran, even as Vice President J.D. Vance met Iranian officials for the first talks under a peace deal, overshadowed by Tehran's announcement it closed the Strait of Hormuz. The talks in the Swiss mountain resort of Burgenstock, owned by mediator Qatar, were the first to be held under the terms of a moratorium of understanding achieved a week ago. It calls for the strait to be reopened and a halt to all hostilities, including in Lebanon, which U.S. ally Israel invaded in March. But Iran, arguing that Washington failed to meet its commitment to halt fighting in Lebanon, said it shut the strait again, and Sunday's talks would not cover substantive issues such as Iran's nuclear program. "Iran must immediately stop their highly paid proxies in Lebanon from causing trouble. If they don't, we'll hit Iran very hard again, just like we did last week, only harder," Trump said, an apparent reference to an escalation he ordered earlier this month. Despite the announcement Friday of a new ceasefire in Lebanon, there was scant sign of an end to fighting there. Iran said Saturday that as a result, it will shut the strait, whose closure for nearly 4 months caused the biggest disruption of global energy supplies in history. U.S. officials disputed whether the strait was closed, but commercially available shipping data showed an immediate impact. Only a single small tanker crossed the strait, with its location signaling transponders on after Iran's announcement, compared with dozens of ships in recent days, when traffic began returning to pre-war level. Iran's Fars news agency cited a military source as saying that no new permits were being issued for ships to cross until further notice. Throughout the war, many shipping companies said it was too dangerous to sail through the strait without Iran's permission. Iran also said there could be no start to the next phase of talks, including over its nuclear program, until Lebanon fighting ends and it gets promised economic benefits. Vance briefly appeared Sunday in front of traveling media as he, envoy Steve Witkoff, and President Donald Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner met Pakistani Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif and Pakistan's Army Chief Field Marshal Assam Manour. Greetings were exchanged, and Vance said, "What's up, man?" as he shook hands with Manour and hugged him, "My brother," Manure said, as he reached out to Witkoff and embraced him. Vance told reporters before his departure that he hoped to make progress on the nuclear issue, as well as a ceasefire in Lebanon. More than 1 million people have been driven from their homes in Lebanon since March by Israel's invasion. However, in a possibly positive sign on Sunday, Reuters journalists in southern Lebanon saw some of the heaviest traffic since the memorandum was signed, with residents returning to homes they fled in the south. Some stood behind cars backed up on the highway and waved Hezbollah flags. Reuters journalists in southern Lebanon also saw rescuers carrying wounded at the sites of the Israeli attacks, which have reduced swaths of Lebanese towns and villages to ruins that residents say resemble the Gaza Strip. Lebanese authorities said 20 people were killed, but there was no immediate reports of violence on Sunday morning. The army said Sunday that specialized units were still working to dismantle unexploded Israeli bombs weighing 1,000 and 2,000 pounds that were dropped on southern towns. Turning to Section B, the sports section, former U.S. coaches see warning signs. Pulisic's injury reduced teams' creativity, by Rory Carroll of Reuters. Los Angeles. The United States may have secured its place in the World Cup knockout rounds with a 2-0 win over Australia, but former U.S. coach Bruce Arena said the performance underscored how much the team misses Christian Pulisic and raised questions about their ability to maintain intensity against stronger opposition. Speaking on Saturday's episode of FanDuel's Coach's Corner, Arena, Bob Bradley, and Greg Berhalter praised the Americans' physicality and first-half display, while noting that Pulisic's absence as he recovers from a calf injury left them short on creativity in the final third. "I think I'm probably going to be a little different than Bob and Greg, but I don't think the United States played a particularly strong game," said Arena, who led the U.S. to the 2002 World Cup quarterfinals. "A good, solid half. First half. Second half, not so good." Arena said Pulisic's return was a major issue for the squad as the level of competition rises. Turkey test. The U.S. next face Turkey, who have lost their first two matches and are eliminated. Arena said Turkey may be the group's strongest technical team and warned they would have pride to play for. Turkey coach Vincenzo Montella would need to lift a distraught squad, Bradley said. While Arena compared the situation to 2002, when already eliminated Poland thrashed the U.S. 3-1 in the final group game. "They wanted to prove they had pride in themselves as a team," Arena said. The coaches also noted a potentially worrying decline in intensity after halftime. "We seemed to drop our energy level considerably in the second half," Berhalter said. "Are we getting to a point where we're fatigued?" Arena said tougher opponents will provide a clearer indication of the U.S. team's strength. "We're going to find out a lot more about our team in the round of 32 and then in the round of 16, he said. Big numbers. The U.S. turned a Friday afternoon match into must-see TV with an overnight rating of 14.78 million viewers, according to Nielsen. The victory over Australia was the fourth largest watched match in the Men's World Cup on English language television. The viewership for Friday's game trailed last week's opener against Paraguay, which attracted 18.04 million viewers and was the largest audience ever for the national team. Today, Monday, June 22nd, we'll see four more matches in the World Cup, beginning with Argentina versus Australia playing in Arlington, Texas, showing at noon on Fox, defending champion Argentina to take a major step toward the knockout stage when it faces Austria in its second World Cup Group J match after both sides opened their campaigns with convincing victories. Lionel Messi inspired Argentina's title defense with a hat trick in their 3-0 win over Algeria. The next match is France versus Iraq, played in Philadelphia. And that game is starting at four on Fox. France is expected to make only minor adjustments rather than wholesale changes when it faces Iraq in both teams' second World Cup Group I match. The Blues opened their campaign with a 3-1 win over Senegal in New York. Iraq suffered a 4-1 defeat to Norway in its opening match. Speaking of Norway, Norway will be facing Senegal, being played at East Rutherford, New Jersey, at 7 p.m. again on Fox. Senegal faces a defensive conundrum as it prepares to play the Norwegians and their prolific striker Erling Haaland. Senegal has been touted as Africa's best hope at the World Cup, but had its confidence knocked by a 3-1 loss to France. Norway, in contrast, made a winning start in its first World Cup game since 1998, with Haaland netting twice in a 4-1 victory over Iraq. The final game of the day is Jordan versus Algeria, being played in Santa Clara, California, be shown at 10 p.m. on FS1. Jordan against Algeria might not seem like a mouth-watering World Cup clash, but a lot could be riding on this Group J game that may turn out to be rich in jeopardy with implications for all two teams. The permutations are complex. But depending on the outcome of Monday's earlier match between Argentina and Austria, defeat for either Algeria or Jordan could mean elimination after just two games. Turning to national and world news, the digest. Officials optimistic Florida wildfires are easing. With Florida crews slowly regaining control of the three brush fires in West Miami-Dade that have burned over 20,000 acres in the past week, residents can expect better conditions, including road reopenings and better air quality. The fires have caused both road closures and air quality alerts in the past week, but lead National Weather Service Miami meteorologist Robert Moleda said conditions are getting better. Iraq set to restore crude oil production. Iraq plans to restore crude oil production gradually to the between 4.2 and 4.3 million barrels a day, Iraq's deputy oil minister for upstream affairs said in a statement. The proposed increases would restore output to levels achieved before the Iran war and resulting in closure of the Strait of Hormuz. Also on Sunday, the head of the Iranian National Oil Company, Hamid Bouvard, told state TV that more than 25 million barrels of Iranian oil passed through the virtual blockade line since last Monday. Ukraine. A conflict between politicians in Poland and Ukraine is a strategic mistake, Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk said, as he sought to defuse a row sparked by a historical dispute. Polish President Karol Nawrocki stripped Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky of the country's top honor, prompting three former Ukrainian presidents to return their state awards to Poland. Zelensky angered Poland by renaming a Ukrainian army unit after a group of nationalists who massacred Poles in World War II. United Kingdom. Embattled British Prime Minister Keir Starmer has stepped down on Monday. Bolivia. A day of fragile gains in Bolivia saw major protest roadblocks cleared, but progress was overshadowed by the crash of a military support flight that killed six people. The highway authority revised its tally of ongoing roadblocks to 28, a day after President Rodrigo Paz declared a state of emergency to resolve a 50-day social crisis. New York. A concert goer fell to his death inside Madison Square Garden at a show by the jam band Goose, New York police said Sunday. The 51-year-old victim suffered injuries indicative of falling from an elevated condition at about 9:50 p.m. Saturday, police said. The victim's name was not immediately known. Colombia. Colombian right-wing candidate Abelardo de la Espria looked poised to win the country's presidential race, notching just under 50% of the vote, with nearly 95% of the ballots counted. His rival, leftist Ivan Cepeda, was some 368,000 votes behind, with 48.4%. And in Ethiopia, Ethiopian President Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's Prosperity Party won a large parliamentary majority in this month's elections. Results released Sunday by the National Election Board showed Abiy's party won 438 seats. It needed 274 to secure a majority. Europe, severe heat waves. Countries brace for heat wave. Meteorologists say African anticyclone resulted in a heat dome, from Reuters. A severe heat wave gripped much of Europe on Sunday, with temperatures reaching 104 degrees Fahrenheit, prompting nationwide warnings, transport disruption, and signs of strain on wildlife and at tourist hotspots. The heat surge on the summer solstice in the Northern Hemisphere, and typically the start of the three hottest months of the year, raised concerns of an early and persistent onset of extreme conditions. After several days of soaring temperatures, Italian authorities issued a red alert for eight cities, including Bologna, Florence, Milan, and Turin. In Rome, pilgrims in St. Peter's Square used parasols and umbrellas to shield themselves from the blazing sun as Pope Leo led a traditional Sunday prayer. The spike in temperatures is being driven by a mass of hot air moving north from the Sahara, fueled by a strong high-pressure system known as the African anticyclone. Meteorologists said the system is creating a so-called heat dome, trapping hot air over Western and Central Europe and allowing temperatures to build day after day. Madrid residents and tourists used fans and drank plenty of cold drinks as they browsed the city's flea market. I'm dressed all in white and it's because it's so hot, and I'm carrying my little electric fan everywhere I go, said Haley Sanciero, a 22-year-old engineer from Miami. Spain's weather agency issued red and orange alerts across several regions, warning of temperatures exceeding 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and said the heat wave would last at least until midweek. In France, the extreme heat disrupted infrastructure. The rail network was strongly impacted by high temperatures that risked damaging overhead power lines and expanding tracks. In Germany, where temperatures have already exceeded 100 degrees, the Weather Service warned of severe thunderstorms in eastern regions, including Berlin. Organizers had to evacuate the grounds of the Berlin Open, a tennis tournament, as heavy rains and strong winds set in, and fans awaited the singles final between Jessica Pegula of the U.S. and Linda Nascola of the Czech Republic. Wildlife rescuers are also reporting mounting pressure. A center near the Belgian city of Namur took in around 150 heat-stressed animals in recent days, with young birds particularly at risk. Nestlings prefer to jump rather than let themselves die and literally cook in their nests, said Creve's founder Romain de Jagar, adding that centers across Belgium were overwhelmed. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph from Monday, June 22nd, 2022. Please stay tuned.